I have a mixed audience of people. Some of my friends from my old friends from UCLA here in the math department came to come to the talk, and we have world experts here in tropical meteorology also. So I'm going, the tropical meteorologist I hope will be a little kind to me when I give some impressionistic things without details, try to show the mathematicians where we're going, and vice versa, the mathematicians who are used to me having equations upon equations and math stuff, there's much less than you might expect, so forgive me on both sides. So there's a really grand challenge problem that inspires me very much, and I got interested in about 8 years ago, and it turns out to have enormous impact for the world community right now in our global warming environment, and it's the hardest computational challenge right now for general circulation models, and that deals with waves in the tropics. And in particular, there's a giant planetary wave in the tropics. It's called the Madden-Julian Oscillation. It's an intraseasonal wave. It exists on 40 to 60 day time scale, say. And that wave propagates in the warmest water as a complex envelope of multi-scale deep convection from the Indian Ocean through the Indonesian marine continent, the Western Pacific, and then usually dies when it hits the cold water as far as the convection in the Eastern Pacific. Not sometimes, if you already have warm water going from an El Nino event like in 97. And then in the upper troposphere, it runs around the globe. Sometimes it then helps that running around the globe makes a longer term teleconnection that can reignite this wave. And we're in the following situation. This wave has an enormous impact on our cyclogenesis. This is one of the only things I'll say about hurricanes. When you're in an active phase of the MJO, it's called it's the dominant component of intraseasonal variability. When you're in the active phase, you're more likely to have cyclogenesis. When it triggers things, it plays a role interacting with the Asian monsoon, and believe it or not, the weather in Los Angeles or New York City, et cetera, 2 weeks down the road is profoundly affected by what happens with the Madden-Julian Oscillation. Richard Kleeman hinted at that, and people at ECMWF, while they can't predict the Madden-Julian Oscillation very well right now, for example, if you put it in from past history, you enhance our mid-latitude predictability on the two-week to 1 month time scale. With our globally warming Earth, of course, you store more water vapor in the tropics and it gets explosively released in the mid-latitudes, more and more. And so all of our weather events in the subtropics and mid-latitudes are tending to become much more severe.
I realized, Andy, why it dies at the date line. It's just basic causality because it can't propagate to yesterday.
Okay. I stole these things from other people, blame them. Mitch Moncrief, my good friend Mitch Moncrief, you can blame. So as I say, general circulation models are really are involved in the hardest engineering problems, and when I put up slides of poor performance of general circulation models, I do this with great respect. These are really extremely hard problems. But first, my perspective, and one I've done with Rupert Klein and others, is to take a multi-scale perspective on these problems. By the way, there's a 10-year field campaign on enhancing predictability in ThorPEX called ThorPEX, enhancing our 2 week to 1 month extended range prediction in these severe weather event simulation world we're living in. And a lot of the effort is going into understanding what's happening with the MJO and improving the MJO. And for example, this will be a major component, I'm told, of the UN year 2008 on planet Earth. So I'm going to show you right now a slide of an observational data set from a Japanese meteorologist, Nakazawa, a junky slide of a classical picture he did. which shows the multi-scale variability one needs to cope with in the tropics. So right now, notice these are monthly scales, and we're looking at a small north-south average around the equator of outgoing long-wave radiation. So the black will be cold things, and that'll be cloud tops filtered on various scales. So the Madden-Julian Oscillation, named this because these were the first people who brilliantly pieced together from the observational record what happens such a wave by looking at surface pressures, largely, and inferred such a wave had to exist in the 70s before we had extensive observations of it. What Nakazawa did was filter the outgoing long-wave radiation to what are called intra-seasonal timescales here. And when he did that, what you see is on the streaks of waves moving. They move about 5 meters a second. They propagate over that warm pool region from the Indian Ocean I told you about. And these are Madden-Julian events. Now, here's another indication of a multi-scale feature. If you blow up this, so you have a couple of month period, and look at what happens, what you see are what are called superclusters. And these are, again, enormous numbers of waves. These are a different beast from this. They're moving at 15 to 20 meters a second. Their lower tropospheric extent is about 2,000 kilometers, and you see these streaks here. Now take this and look at about a 1 month time scale, and embedded in these events, you see very powerful streaks now moving westward. These are squall line clusters, which have a much shorter lifetime individually on organization and going on us with typical spatial scales of orders hundreds of kilometers. So this is showing you why, at least impressionistically, this is a multi-scale problem. And maybe the challenges in understanding this involve multi-scale mathematics. Now let me show you the argument in my own mind for why scale separation is a good concept to think about multi-scales for the large scales. So problems down to the equatorial synoptic scale, which if people went to Joe Biello's talk, is scales of about 1,200 kilometers, say, the weather scales of the tropics. So what you see is here's logarithmic plot of frequency. This is called a Wheeler-Pilatus diagram, named after these people. In fact, this very pretty diagram is courtesy of George Pilatus. In fact, this is from their original paper. So we have wavelength here, and we're looking at, again, the cloud tops. So that could be misleading. The clouds sometimes spread much more on their smaller structures in the lower troposphere where we're living. But what you see is, so here's frequency, here's the days. You see, after the climatological spectrum was removed, a giant bump here of low frequency, large scale, slow moving waves. That's the Madden-Julian Oscillation. Then you see the waves that are identified now observationally in single realizations with this branch are what are the superclusters that move west, that move eastward. These are the convectively coupled Calvin waves. And the westward inertial gravity waves, which are the so-called two-day waves, which play a very important role in the local dynamics of organized convection. So these are the cloud cluster waves. So you can see on our logarithmic plot, 6 days, 2 days. See, I didn't lie to you. These are two-day waves. That's why they're called that. 6 days here, Madden-Julian Oscillation, 30 days or longer. So there's a real scale separation between these things and this. Furthermore, there's a spatial scale separation. When you look at individual events, in the lower middle troposphere, these are going on scales of order of a couple of thousand kilometers. These are planetary scale monster here. There's also a very important branch here, which bears a lot further investigation, which is an equatorial Rossby branch. Now here platted are the classical dispersion relations of shallow water theory. And what you see is of the equatorial shallow water at various equivalent depths. What's the subtle thing is when you look at the vertical structure of these waves, it has none of the vertical structure of the corresponding dry shallow water things moving at those phase speeds. So that's at the large scales. Now, how well does a very good mid-latitude general circulation model do on reproducing those waves? And this may be why the Madden-Julian Oscillation is such a monster to capture. Well, here was that truth thing blown down, and this is from a very nice paper of Zhao Lin and 14 authors. So that's just the other diagram shrunk, and Zhao Lin said very intelligently, let's repeat all the tests for all for the 14 competing general circulation models of prominence around the world, and they did that. It's remarkably disappointing. I'm sorry? It's in Journal of Climate, 2006. And what you see is there's no power in convectively coupled Kelvin waves. There's no westward inertial gravity waves. There's extremely, extremely weak power in the MJO. And this is a very good general circulation model for mid-latitude dynamics. And one of the issues is we have all of these waves moving with envelopes and envelopes, and this GFDL model tends to produce standing convection. Furthermore, I want to make a comment. I don't have a slide. I was at NCAR this summer, and Jim Hack had a little planning meeting for the tropics I was involved in, showed slides of a nested dwarf, which is a small-scale model, tropical model, and showed the Wheeler-Colatus diagram for that. And you might think improving the small scales would help. And to me, it was very disappointing. They got a lot of power in the Kelvin wave, very accurately. Unfortunately, they also got a lot of power in something that doesn't even sit on the classical dispersion diagrams, a wave going right here. And that's another signal of too much standing convection in general circulation models. Because if you have this and it's anti-mode, that means there's too much standing convection. So yeah, even
that's really explicit.
It had King-Fritsch parameterization. I'm sorry they made that choice too for other reasons, but that's what they did. That's what they had. So I'm an applied mathematician, as some members of the audience go. And so I got interested in this problem about 8 years ago. What I was told by several very prominent theoreticians not in this room is stay away from this. This is a nightmare and a really hard problem. And of course, people who know me from the math community, this is like waving a red coat in front of a bull, so I just charge right in. And that's what I've been doing. Okay. And so I've been putting this slide up for 25 years, and in this particular context, what I'd like to say with the strategies, all of these strategies are operating, I think, in attacking the tropics. But the point of view I will take, and I then decided I would make a lot of contact with people who know the observations well, because of a wonderful field campaign called TOGACAR in the early 90s in the tropical Western Pacific. There's a lot of observational data about all of these events and other field campaigns. So what I decided is, going around this diagram to understand what happens with GCMs, I would first try to make models and use ideas that would reproduce the observed phenomena, and then hope I can do things that will give insights into some of the really hard issues for GCM. So that's the strategy I took. And I'm putting this slide up. All the papers are available on my website to show everyone the span of what I've been doing, because some of you, some mathematicians may not be interested in my talk at all. You could leave after you see this slide. You could download everything I'm doing. So this multi-pronged attack was, first of all, developing hierarchical multi-scale models. And I'd like to make a point about this. So in the mid-latitudes, developing balanced models is something that's very intuitive, because the Coriolis parameters are controlled and you have geostrophic balance, which to leading order tells you just that streamlines are pressure contours. Near the equator, if you look at the vertical axis and the direction of rotation, it vanishes exactly at the equator. And because of that, there's a remarkable amount of phenomena of waves. So since I've been doing waves for 35 years in various contexts, that was very appealing to me. But from the point of view of developing even single-scale balance models, it's not very obvious, because you don't have separation in various ways. And for doing multi-scale models, here's a case for applied mathematics. Figuring out the correct secular terms for nonlinear PDEs in multi-scale contexts is a real task. So you need a lot of machinery of applied mathematics. I'm very lucky. I got Rupert Klein, my good friend, interested in these projects for the tropics when he was doing his own multi-scale work. And I'll report a little bit on these. Joe Biello discussed how we use this as a diagnostic model for the MJO and a little bit about how using this we came up with a theory for why there's super rotation in the MJO. I'll talk about this. An obviously really interesting question where we've done some work, and there are new equations come up, by the way, for the applied mathematicians with the reported in the Journal of Atmospheric Science. And a very important issue if people get interested where more work should be done theoretically is mid-latitude troposphere connections with the tropics. So that intermediate scale of what I call the superclusters, I've been developing multi-cloud models. I will talk about these in the talk. Now these look like old slides. We haven't written up another paper, but Joe Tribbia during the meeting was discussing, is it possible to trick bad models with stochastic parameterizations to get to improve their parameterization of waves? And we have a paper not yet written, but a lot of results trailing these where that's possible. Then from the mathematical point of view, you'd like to know what some of the general circulation models are doing. And David Nealon taught me, 8 or 9 years ago, a very beautiful simplified route for making a general circulation model simpler. We followed that route, and Dargan Frierson and myself and Olivier Paul, we asked, what are the nonlinear waves in a typical Arakawa-Schubert or Betz-Miller parameterization? And it turned out to be a huge amount of fun. I won't talk about that here. And there are some very interesting consequences. And then Sam Steckman, who's my PhD student in the first part of his thesis, we looked at what are the finite relaxation adjustments to moisture boundaries nonlinearly in the system. So if you want to see the mathematics of how the GCMs in a simplified context, all of David Nealon's type models are in the GCM, they're here. And if you're a mathematician, there are wonderful new hyperbolic, very strange exotic hyperbolic relaxation systems here. And the following one is for mathematicians. After working with Rupert so hard on multi-scale models for all these years, I finally decided I have to try to prove something about some of them. And I was very lucky, a postdoc from Belgium wanted to visit me with his own money. Poor guy, he didn't know what he was getting into. We managed to actually justify rigorously in simplified shallow water dynamics cases this. And for people who are experts in fast wave averaging for hyperbolic PDEs, this is the first results I know for fast wave averaging where the fast waves have variable coefficients. The proofs would not work without extremely special structure of the equatorial dynamics being used. You can find all these things on my website. What I'll really be talking about is the hierarchical multi-scale modeling and the cloud dynamics and the rest of my talk. Okay, so I gave you Nakazawa's picture from the late 80s, where if you're a physicist or an applied mathematician, you think of self-similarity. Not the wave speed, so there's self-similarity if you don't care about the phase speeds, and of course that's a magic problem. There's some kind of self-similarity, so a very natural thing to think about is there more self-similarity observationally? And Brian Mapes and George Kalatas have looked at a number of these individual events of all the types I showed you there and at squall lines too. And there is, in a certain sense, a self-similarity even in detailed waves. And there's a very nice paper of Mapes and others in this special volume of DAO that just came out. So what I thought, Rupert Klein and I had older work, so these are the equations appropriate for the intra-seasonal time scale. So here's the spatial scales. Here's the time scales. So Joe Biello's lecture occurred using the balanced models for the MJO, applied to the MJO on these two scales, equatorial synoptic scale to equatorial planetary scale. The natural pivoting scale for large-scale dynamics in the equatorial zone is the equatorial synoptic scale and the equatorial time scale. Now, impressionistically, 8 hours is the unit. You run these 10 times 8 hours. So 10 times 8 hours is a good equatorial few-day wave activity. And what I decided to do, and I have a paper that's coming out right now in the Journal of Atmospheric Science, I decided to stand back and see, is it possible to have an extended self-similarity principle in the following sense? There are multi-time balance models here for the synoptic scales going to the planetary scales. This is called the intraseasonal planetary scale equatorial synoptic scale dynamics. This is the mesoscale equatorial synoptic scale dynamics here. So the longest time scale of this model is the shortest time scale of this one. The longest spatial scale of this one is the shortest one. And furthermore, these are both derived under weak temperature gradient assumptions and low Froude number assumptions, which are very natural with the dry gravity wave speed of 50 meters a second, low Froude number is 5 meters a second winds. So there's a perfect, in a certain suitable sense, there's a very nice self-similarity. And I'm going to describe on one of my next slides what are the balance models going here to here, the analog. They'll have a little bearing on what Mike was talking about, and Isaac had mentioned about potential cyclogenesis regions and a toy model you might look at to get some insight in how large-scale dynamics across the equatorial waveguide might connect and feed into that. Okay, and so there's a very nice, in fact, extended self-similarity going on here. It's mentioned in my book, I mean in my recent paper. That's not yet come out. Then there's a little less perfect self-similarity, but Wojtek, who's one of my teachers in tropical meteorology from my NCAR visits, he and Mitch Moncrief back eight or nine years ago, has, of course, this wonderful work on superparameterization with a lot of mysteries, a real breakthrough work. So what I thought is I should go from 10-kilometer scales to 100-kilometer scales and go from scales of 15 minutes, say, to a few hours, and see if I could get a certain formulation here. And now in a very crude sense, not entirely satisfactory because this isn't low Froude number, these scales roughly match into these scales too. So that's the hierarchy of scales. This is a squalline, organized squalline regime from scattered convection to organized squalines. This is how the organized squalines might feed into the superclusters, and this is how superclusters, two-day waves, might feed into the MJO. That's what all these scales are about. So, let me show you what the balanced mesoscale equatorial synoptic scale dynamic equations look like. And they're rather pretty. So, first, we have on the equatorial synoptic scales, we have the linearized equatorial wave dynamics equations. They're fed by mean sources and by very nice eddy flux terms. These are vertical eddy flux terms. The balanced mesoscale dynamics are a weak temperature gradient approximation. You can get a pressure source that comes up from moisture. So that's a very nice pressure source. It'll be hydrostatically balanced. And then what's very interesting here is if you do a Helmholtz decomposition to the fluctuating velocity on this scale, write it as a gradient and a stream function, then in order to self-consistently satisfy the asymptotics, first you get a weak temperature gradient relation. So the rapid equilibration of gravity waves occurs in this waveguide problem. It supplies sources of divergence here. And then the vertical vorticity itself satisfies a very beautiful equation. Now on the equatorial synoptic scales, this y is, on the mesoscales, this y is frozen, so it's really a fixed f-plane problem. And you see you can spin up vorticity from heating. It couples interactively if it makes an eddy flux here with the equatorial wave environment it's in, and it can be sheared, vertically sheared as we well know, by the equatorial wave environment it's in. And then we have the F-plane effect from heat sources, a very interesting heat source production term depending on the large-scale shear and other things, et cetera. So this is a very attractive set of equations. one of my postdocs is here at the meeting, Majid Mohammadian, is working with me on these equations. Absolutely.
Are the horizontal antiparticles missing from the top set because of the lack of Coriolis acceleration?
No, no. They're lower order in these scales, and I show that in the paper, and they're not lower order in the MJO part, because that's probably what you remember, because we have the long wavelength approximation zonally. It's an anisotropic scaling, and actually there you get because of that, you get periodontal fluxes. So here the, that's no typo.
You're saying the vertical scale in some ways much smaller than the horizontal scale, is that
really? No, it's non-dimensionally, it's really not that. What just happens is on these time scales, those eddy fluxes are an order lower in epsilon. So on a few day time scale, those things don't yet accumulate, whereas these do. That's really the reasoning, if you look at the paper. Oh, that's a typo. It should be the curl prime of the gradient. My God, thank you for paying attention. And what happens is, this moisture source will have so this is the large scale gradient, and then this is the smaller scale curl of the large scale gradient, which is a meaningful quantity. Thank you, that was a typo. So I'm delighted people are paying attention. That's good. So that gives you some flavor and how you might use it to see, of course, if you're spinning up a cyclone, how it might affect the equatorial dynamics or vice versa. And it's coupled in a nice way with shear interacting and very simple. It's also a very nice model if you want to see how you make, as a hypothesis model, as we did for the Madden-Julian oscillation with Joe Biello, how you might make superclusters, two-day waves, convectively coupled Calvin waves in a hypothesis model, where we try to assess how important are the mean heating effects versus the turbulent flux effects. Okay. Now here's where I make some contact with Bjorn's lecture and with Wojtek's work and with Dave Randall's lecture coming up, I think. So in another paper I've got coming out very soon in Journal of Atmospheric Science, what I did is take this multi-scale tack and look at so I've given evidence on those first large-scale regimes where observationally there's clear multi-scale separation to me for the waves of interest. On these smaller scales, here's where we're in a gray area. Is there really multi-scale separation? And Bjorn made a very nice comment where people do multi-scale separated thinking anyway when they design parameterizations. And so what I decided to do is I wanted very much, because I knew there was a lot of exciting activity which I participated in actually earlier than before this term was called, heterogeneous multi-scale method, although it's fine with me. But Bjorn and Wainani, as you saw, very nicely reformulated many, many things so that new numerical techniques from applied math can be utilized. So I thought with Wojtek's really exciting work with superparameterization, it would be good to see if I could put on a more firm basis that kind of thinking. So through the systematic multi-scale modeling I do here, you'll see we'll have a way to think about superparameterization, column modeling, or other approximations in between. Now, I make no claims that people couldn't eyeball some similar models. The value of systematic asymptotics is we keep the right terms on the right time scales and interaction. And what I'll say is not a new numerical strategy, it's a new formulation which may inspire people to think about other approximations besides superparameterization. So it should look both familiar to the atmospheric scientists and not. So what we have here now, it's that lower box, and we have two space scales and two time scales. So what's going on the 15-minute time scale? So we'll have to look at what happens on the small space scales and the big space scales. So, on the big space scales, on 15-minute time scales, we get something everyone who is a atmospheric scientist recognizes as a column model. So what we have is bulk horizontal column model with the associated turbulent fluxes, including moisture, cloud vapor, etc., on the right-hand side. So this is the standard kind of thing where people would make parameterizations for all of these effects in a column model. Good. We at least have column models here on those very short time scales but bigger face spatial scales. Then, what do we have on the longer time scale and the bigger spatial scales? Well, we have something that looks like a standard eddy parameterization, except now these are the spatial averages temporally now averaged. And what we can carefully do is self-consistently write down all of the eddy fluxes and the form of the eddy fluxes. And what happens? That's done here. So this would be the larger scale version of the eddy flux parameterization. So if we just had a coarse resolution model on the mesoscales, we would be parameterizing something like this with eddy fluxes. Now, the key is what to do on the microscales. And here, of course, on the microscales, you would solve for the prime variables, although you can compare the primes and the bars on the same, put them together and have a combined equation. That's how you'd actually do it. But pedagogically then, on the micro time scale and micro space scale, we have the full complexity with ambient shears from the large scales at the same times entering. We have perturbed equations for the cloud microphysics. So Wojtek Grabowski's idea in superparameterization was, replace these by periodic geometry micro problems and solve them massively parallel and make them 1D and save labor. As I say, the formulation I have now would allow you to do things massively parallel or to do always, but right now the formulation is as expensive as the original problem.
But did you call it quasi 1D, or did you just miss something?
Well, what Wojtek then did here is he said we've got this mess for the prime variables, and what we should do is take the prime variables, and if we wanted to solve them as a full 2D thing, as the microscale, that's too expensive, so let's take a periodic box, solve those primed equations on the periodic box, and do it as a one-dimensional periodic thing. So that was superparameterization. Okay, the nice thing about these methods now is we have a systematic way of thinking, maybe we can get by without a really huge computationally expensive black box here. And we have a way of having a conceptual framework where we can think about things that aren't superparameterization, but will follow this mathematical framework for it and replace this by another approximation. So let me tell you the directions I can possibly see. And here, this is the reformulation exactly as a heterogeneous multi-scale method, as Bjorn talked very nicely, and Bjorn Enquist, there are two Bjorns here, in his talk. So just to summarize, if you ignore micro fluctuations, you get standard column modeling. If you use 1D periodic micro fluctuations, you get Wojtek's superparameterization. And it's very interesting to entertain the possibility of using Kruder solvers of the micro fluctuation. So one simple example, which for our Rocky Mountain downslopes, summer thunderstorms that roar across the plains, and if you're stuck living in places like Kansas or Oklahoma, you really feel them. Moncrief and Liu, for example, without having this formalism, said, let's at least include some stratiform dipole heating in the parameterizations. That's a very simple example of what I just already in the literature, where what I said occurs, namely replace the complex prime variables by just some stratiform heating. In other words, get away from the direct column model. I'll talk in the next part of my lecture about multi-cloud models, and Sam Steckman in the major part of his thesis, we're trying to exploit self-similarity ideas and use some multi-cloud models that Will and Cooter and I have worked on to see if we can have very cheap models. Because the main feature we want in the prime variables is if the convection is just bubbling up, the column models are good enough. The thing Wojtek gains is coherence. When you go from scattered convection to an organized coherent structure of squall lines, that's when the eddy fluxes are big to the large scales and where superparametrization gains a lot. And that's where he was able to simulate the first MJO-like wave, because he had that feature. So if you can build a cheaper model that you could run unbelievably cheaply with responding in the right way to the large scale shears, then that could replace superparametrization. And yeah, do that. So this is the kind of direction we're looking at. And the other point I make, Bjorn made it too, we talked before the meeting, one thing applied mathematics has is when you have these complex multi-scale, multi-time problems, the numerics gets very subtle for how to develop good methods. And we know we care tremendously about having 4 delta X resolution or 10 delta X resolution in these problems. That's 40 kilometers versus 100 kilometers, as we know for us in the atmospheric science community. And so this framework, I hope, will lead to methods that have the potential of, I gave this here at ICAM, this part of the talk, because I really want the community of multi-scale modelers in applied mathematics to see whether the numerics will work. And in fact, we have a pilot project at Courant where one of my postdocs is here, Yulong Jing, and Olivier Pauly and I are trying to implement all of these things and thinking about other approximations in the ZTAP model. So now, I'd like to talk about multi-cloud parametrizations, which were originally used for the supercluster scale, and then end with an analog model for the Madden-Julian oscillation. So, let me tell you a little bit about some work I've been doing with Boulam Kuder, who's my former postdoc and professor at University of Victoria. And it's multi-cloud parametrizations for convectively coupled tropical waves. You can see this is an old slide from the Hurricanes and Tropical Meteorology meeting in Monterey last year. So let me give an introduction for the mathematicians. Moist convection is complex. Got multi-scale, not Muttley scale, although it might have Muttley scale interactions. It's got organized convection, and it's got a major impact on weather and climate. GCMs perform poorly in representing these, including the MJO. By the way, the MJO, mathematicians like having conjectures. The MJO and its understanding has been called by one of the meteorologists the holy grail of meteorology. I'm trying to find it, and I hope my work is at least contributing to the search. And so one of the main things are, why are GCMs doing so badly? So what are the missing physics? So what are the simplest possible models to address these questions? Well, so what people realized is we need paradigm simpler models, and in a very nice way atmospheric scientists make models. These aren't formally rigorously converged models, but they're wonderful qualitative models, is to do vertical truncation of mode structure. Various ways. So people said we had deep convection, so let's do vertical, one vertical mode representing the heating from clouds. And there's a long history of these kinds of models, and there was a huge controversy about something called CISC, and then there were quasi-equilibrium models of this sort, Kerry Emanuel and David Neeland and Isaac Helder, essentially at the same time. Made such kinds of models to mimic Arakawa-Schubert schemes or Betz-Miller type schemes with a big, and emphasizing the role of that source of evaporative energy late latent heating from the extremely warm water. Well, the observationalists from the field campaign of Togakure in the 1990s really found that three cloud types above the boundary layer were really important in the dynamics, and not just this deep convective mode. So the trimodal nature of tropical convection is ignored in these early models.
Well,
so
first model was the three-layer.
I'm a terrible historian. I don't know this.
So when he first started developing his quasi-equilibrium model, it was in the context of the three-cloud type model.
You know, but Bohm was the middle layer.
So Brian Mapes was the first person who realized. So there are three kinds of cloud types, and one has already appeared in the conference. So first you get the deep convection going up to the troposphere, then you have these things that people thought were dynamically very, very harmless, these long stratiform decks in the upper troposphere, which produce a lot of rain over a large area, but aren't particularly violent in themselves. And so Brian Mapes, one of the leading observationalists, proposed the simple two vertical mode model, and in my attempts getting into the field, actually, I simplified and mathematized what he was doing, and then we used the nonlinear simulations and compared with observations. And Boulam Kuder and I finally put in all the three types. There are deep cloud, stratiform, and something that's really been ignored, congestus, which has an enormously strong role in the observational record, and is the new three cloud type model we worked on. So we have three papers already published on this, two in the Journal of Atmospheric Science, one from 2006, one that just came out in 2007, one in the DAO special volume, and one in the Theoretical and Computational Fluid Dynamics special volume on tropical convection and waves. So we've studied all the parameters for these models you can imagine, and we use them to get the observed features of convective superclusters. So that's a challenge, so that scale of waves on the equatorial synoptic scale, they have eastward phase speeds of roughly 15 meters a second, a convective field of 2,000 to 3,000 kilometers in the lower troposphere, anomalously cold temperatures usually leading, the pressures of things are tilted. What you see is there's anomalous increases in the lower, in the boundary layer of the equivalent potential temperature and the convectively available potential energy. So the equivalent potential temperature, think of if you're a mathematician, as temperature plus latent heat times cloud vapor. So if you're a combustion person, that's the enthalpy related to it. And the trailing parts of the wave are dominated by stratiform precipitation. Now, I don't want to emphasize this here, but the models I'm going to describe next give all of these features sequentially, exactly as in the observations, and have a mechanism of instability which has nothing in common with the mechanisms proposed from the vertical mode models, the simple models on the earlier slide. So here are the three cloud types. First, we have boundary layer clouds, and here's the warm, the reservoir of warm, moist air. Some clouds punch through the boundary layer. And here's dynamically where they punch through the boundary layer. You're in a situation with a very high convectively available potential energy. For the mathematicians, that's telling you that if you can overcome convective inhibition here where there's still stable stratification at saturation, a parser will want to rise and deep convect. Now what happens is quite often in the tropics, and the reason why we have so little deep convection in the tropics compared to these estimates of things like convectively available potential energy is while we have large cape, the troposphere, the lower middle troposphere is dry. So it's not so favorable for deep convection. What these congestus clouds do is they heat and moisten the lower troposphere, and then they rise roughly to a level of the melting level of ice, and then they cool above. The stratiform clouds, this is a terrible picture, are long extended decks with which are heating from above from condensational heating of phase changes to ice and from radiative greenhouse heating, and then have stratiform precipitation over a wide area falling. And then the massive towers, which are the standard deep convective modes, which rise to the top of the tropopause and release most of their heat in the middle, are the other primary cloud, which are in the usual models. So, how do we represent such things? We use the vertical Galliard truncation mode idea, which I learned from David Neelan. And here is the basic deep convective heating mode. The deep convective heating mode will create heating like this. This is the middle of the troposphere, and associated with it is this kind of shear. Now, what we did for simplicity, and we in the papers published, that's what we have. We said, now, this mode, by the way, has a dry gravity wave speed of 50 meters per second. If you look at the observational record, and Mapes and House did, and ask where there are spectral peaks in the dry dynamics, they're roughly at 50 meters a second and 25 meters a second, 52 and 23, actually. That'll be important for this second choice. So this is a big spectral peak wave for dry dynamics. Of course, we're going to look at it interacting with moisture. The second vertical mode is a 25 meter a second one. It's associated with the second spectral peak, and we said, geez, this is a very nice model, first of all, for the congestus, where we heat in the lower troposphere and cool in the upper troposphere in the stratiform, where we heat in the upper troposphere and cool in the lower troposphere. So let's make a vertical Galliard mode model with that boundary layer, where here are what the equations look like. They may look ugly to the mathematicians, but they're pretty.
Why does the congestus cool in the upper troposphere?
I'm sorry?
Why does the congestus
cool? It doesn't really cool all the way in the upper troposphere, but there's radiative cooling at cloud top, which right now in these simple models we're cranking all the way up.
But that's a different scale for the heat.
Well, at the stage of the analysis we do, that's a minor detail. So that doesn't matter. We pick the simplest things mathematically. You're absolutely right. We could confine that cooling effect to a different vertical mode that raises the complexity of the points we're trying to demonstrate without really changing. Right now. Oh, okay. Jeez. No, yeah. I started late.
You have an hour, but you have 50 minutes. I was going to try to leave some stuff, but don't go too long.
Okay. I started late. Okay. So now, what we get are two shallow water equations from those two vertical baroclinic mode truncations. What we have is a parametrization. This is the first baroclinic mode. So this is, in our models, the Arakawa-Schubert-Betz-Miller-type parametrization, which is good, because this model, we hope, will suggest how to improve parametrizations. What we have for the second baroclinic mode is heating and cooling, it's a minus sign here, from the stratiform and congestus modes, opposite signs. Another very key feature of these models is for our moisture equation, of course, what stuff goes up has to come out as precipitation, so we have that. But something that's an extremely crucial thing for these models is if you do the vertical Galliard projection, there is a second there's low-level moisture convergence that's important. And that's due to this combination of second baroclinic mode and first baroclinic mode. Those are the key features. This feature is set equal to zero in all models before ours. And then we have a very simple boundary layer of the type that Carrie talked about, where we have a huge source of evaporative latent heating from the reservoir of the ocean, and we have a standard tendency model with the boundary layer thickness. And of course, what we do, and Carrie taught us this, that all these models should really be doing this, and I'm astonished, like Kate Fritch is one of those that doesn't, we should really conserve vertically integrated moist static energy as an expression of horizontal divergence and get just the radiative cooling and the source heating as a result of these models do that.
What about lambda and alpha?
Lambda is just the parameter you get from the vertical truncation. It's 0.8 when you look at the vertical mode Galliard thing. Q Q-twiddle represents the background soundings moisture thing projected on these modes. Those are worked out. Now, so those are what the models are. And so you'll just have to trust me in what I say about them, because I don't want to give the details now. I want to, in the end, build a little analog MJL model. So the concluding summary about these things is they're multi-cloud. The instability mechanisms are not CISC. They have nothing to do with WSHI, which is good, because the convectively coupled Calvin waves have no observational evidence for WSHI at all. And the MJO has essentially no observational role for WSHI, except perhaps in the westerly wind burst region. It has a very nice switch function about moistening and drying of the middle troposphere, where essentially if we had high Cape and we have a very dry upper troposphere, we should really just make congestus clouds instead and punch through and moisten and precondition instead. Then, very appealingly, we have the quasi-equilibrium parameterizations for the deep convective things. So everyone will have to trust me when we run these models. What we get are all the... Yes?
Just a real quick question. When you say no wish, what does that mean? Does that mean?
Well, we have a fixed evaporative, surface evaporative heat flux, not depending on wind speed.
Fixed. So, okay.
And I can tell you a lot of the evidence for why for these big waves, WSHI is not, not relevant. Absolutely, good question. So now I want to return briefly to the MJO. And so there we pick normal time scales and we recover all the features of convectively coupled Calvin waves and their dynamics. Now here's what the MJO looks like. To observationalist Dick Johnson, who is the inventor of the three cloud type paradigm, by the way, from the observational record. And here is what you see in the Madden-Julian oscillation, and Joe Biella showed this kind of slide before, so this is intraseasonally. And during the toga core, they saw a kind of double-headed MJO, where you first had congestus, deep convective, and then stratiform. And what happens is the wind switch from easterly to westerly at the bottom, migrate to strong westerlies above, and then the convection is shut down. And this is a planetary scale wave monster, and it's a complex multi-scale envelope. So here's the challenge for theoreticians. And my point of view at this stage was, could we build an MJO analog wave? So here's what you'd like to do. You'd like to have it have an actual propagation speed of 4 to 7 meters a second predicted by theory. It should be a wave number 2 or something like that structure, but with, very importantly, intraseasonal distinct active and inactive phases of deep convection. Here's the challenge for theoreticians. It has to be an intermittent, turbulent, chaotic, multi-scale model within the wave envelope involving embedded westward structures and eastward structures. And the low-frequency planetary scale envelope should recover at least qualitatively the observational features that zonally, that east-west, that Dick Johnson put forward. So we have such an analog model. And that's work of myself, Sam Steckman. This isn't the main part of his thesis, but he helped me enormously on it, and Boulam Kuder. And now we did something, this is why I call it an analog model, because what we're doing is taking all of the multi-scale features of the packets we think are important, that are congestus and deep convective and stratiform, and replacing them, as a turbulence theorist might, by longer lag times. So there were lag times in the multi-cloud model appropriate for the convective processes. Instead, we're going to invoke self-similarity and think about 12-hour deep convective time scales along stratiform and congestus time scale. Now, Bill Lau from NASA, when I first gave these results, told me that he's been doing congestus buildup measurements of the MJO, and he gets a number like that, which makes me very happy. So here's a paper we've sent to the Journal of Atmospheric Science. It's right now under review. Didn't send it too long ago. So absent from the model, it's a heretical model. Can you just build an MJO-like thing from large scales? And I'm thinking this is the analog for the tropics of the Lorentz 96 model. No WSHI in wave cysts, no active radiation. And in fact, I believe eddy flux divergences are very important. If you heard J. Joe Biello stock. I won't have those.
No app rating or active rating?
No app. These are all absent.
Oh, absent.
Absent. So no active. Of course, we have radiative cooling of one degree Kelvin. The usual thing. We don't even have rotation. This is going to be a right on the equator model. But what will happen is all those features I mentioned on the other side of the blackboard are going to be satisfied. And not only that, by varying the climatological parameters, we'll go from weak MJOs to strong multiscale MJOs. So now I'm running out of time. I was going to show you the linear theory stability diagram. I won't do that. It does motivate. Why? So what we did is apply the rescaling. You might say, okay, what's the big deal? You guys have just rescaled the equations. Life is not that simple. If you rescale the equations straightforwardly, you'll get unearthly radiative cooling, 0.1 degree Kelvin per day. So you have to do something else in order to balance that. But then we find a rather reasonable parameter regime with those lags, where we look at the unstable waves. They're all on the intraseasonal time scale, and there are about 10 or 12 of them. So there's possibility of a multi-scale cascade in the waves. And now I'll just quickly show everyone. Here, this made me very happy when we ran our little multi-scale model code in this regime. What we see is here's the deep convective precipitation. It really goes up to 20. This is an artifact of an old slide. This is 6 meters a second. This is 50 days. Small scale structures going westward and eastward everywhere. Active phase of convection, very intermittent and chaotic. Inactive phase of deep convection, chugging away. Right phase speed. This is an aquaplanet, no continents. Take that extremely turbulent fluctuating signal and average it by just picking that time direction and being a turbulence theory person and computing the means. Here's the structure you get. You've got congestus leading, deep convective stratiform. This is 40,000 kilometers here. And this is one piece of that double-headed wave. So this looks pretty good. Let's look at the westerly windburst structure. The westerly windburst is too weak, I believe. But if you rectify this with eddy fluxes, you will strengthen this a lot. This is a 5 meter a second westerly windburst in the model, but it has all the right behavior. The westerlies come in over easterlies at the bottom of the boundary layer. They migrate to their strongest places aloft when the convection gets shut off. Now I'll just end by showing you what the turbulent averages are in the wave. And what should happen for this wave is the fluctuations should be as big or bigger than the amplitudes of the wave themselves, and that's what's happening. These are about the 10 Kelvin a day heating rates we had before. The other slide had a couple of Kelvin. And you see, we have a very interesting role, I can't get into it, of the preconditioning moistening from congestus clouds. And the role of, in fact, all the three cloud types is here in the dynamics with the right phase lags. So I'm sorry for running by my watch 3 minutes over, but I'll stop.